Welcome to the Real Estate Lowdown. I'm your host, Bill Bimel. The Real Estate Lowdown is your weekly opportunity to step into the conversations going on in today's real estate and mortgage markets. We explore terms and concepts of the industry, host interviews of intriguing industry cohorts from high net worth investors to real estate agents just making their mark. We will share our love of all things real estate, bringing you the most innovative and sustainable real estate lifestyle ideas each and every week. If you enjoy what you hear today, hit the follow button, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and please share your support with a quick review. You can find me on the web at billbimel.com, and thanks for joining this episode of the Real Estate Lowdown. Joe Battag, welcome to the Real Estate Lowdown. Great to be with you, pal.
I'm here, Bill.
So you're, you know, one of our returning champions to the podcast, a longtime friend of mine. We've invested in deals together. You're Fannie Mae, FHA, REO broker for decades through three or four cycles. And you're based in Florida, which has, you know, one of the most roller coaster reputations, one could say, in terms of real estate values. With all that being said, you know, here we are on a day that only comes around once every 4 years. Leap year 2024. You were last on the podcast last year, and you made the promise, and thank you for coming back and bringing us a new update as we head into 2024. Talk about, you know, well, just, you know, what's the state of Florida real estate in general? And then I'm sure that'll take us in many areas of conversation.
It's, as usual, it's really down to regions and even down to zip codes as far as how every market is reacting to the current, demand supply. Generally speaking, I'll talk about a little bit about my little neck of the woods, which is South Florida, Palm Beach County, Jupiter, Florida. We're part of the Miami MSA. And what we've seen here over the last 6 months is more of a balanced market in the sense that our inventory supply now is at 5.5 months. So it's in balance. You know, generally speaking, 5 to 6 months is a balanced market. So we're not seeing the craziness that we saw in 21. And properties that are properly priced are still selling. There's still, you know, pretty good demand in our market. A lot of that's driven by the fact that we've had a lot of out-of-state buyers that still continue to impact this market. And that includes, you know, the normal suspects of New York and New Jersey, particularly the New York City area. West Palm Beach, which is just north of Jupiter, now is considered Wall Street South. So we see a lot of private equity, hedge fund money, Wall Street money. That's particularly driving the Jupiter market because this is kind of the place to be for a residential home in terms of quality of life and great schools. And to give you an illustration of that, pre-COVID, the average sales price for a single family home in 2019 was about $550,000. And it's right around 1.1 million today, you know, but then when you start looking at other markets throughout Florida on a regional basis, you see different considerations, different impacts. You're the West Coast of Florida. Let me put it this way. Miami is one of the very few markets in the country where, generally speaking, throughout the country, we've had a double top on values.
Right.
Miami is one of the very few markets. The second top is higher than the first top. The first top was the second quarter of 22. This top is a little bit higher than that, which is rare for most regions throughout the country and even in Florida, where we're seeing that second top already starting to diminish in other parts of Florida. But that's not the case yet in South Florida. But you're seeing that on the West Coast, Orlando and Jacksonville in particular, where you're seeing a little bit less demand. The other thing that I find very interesting is nationally, and this came out with the MBA conference, which you missed, by the way, last week in Orlando.
Yeah.
Nationally.
Oh, I'm glad. I want to hear more from 10%
that. 10% default rate on FHA loans nationally.
10%?
10% nationally.
Good.
So, of course, politicians being what they are during an election year, they're trying to kick the can down the road. So there was an announcement at the conference that there's going to be $9 billion of taxpayer money thrown at the problem. And they're going to extend the mortgages from 30 years to 40 years, for instance, which I'd like to know from your perspective, how that can be from a contractual basis if you have a 30-year mortgage and how that can be modified to 40 when you've got investors, involved on buying those loans. That's
Right.
a good question. I'd like to know about that. But anyway, so that's going on behind the scenes, which is affecting the lower end of the market. At least it will at some point. I think, it's going to be kicked, and the can will be kicked down the road. And then you've got VA, which is around 4% on the foreclosure rate, but the administration has put a halt on all foreclosures for VAs until I think October of this year, unless the homes are vacant. That's the only way they'll start the foreclosure action. The other
Wow.
interesting part was there was discussions during the MBA conference that the government's going to subsidize VA mortgage rates to the like back like I don't know, they were talking through throwing numbers about 3 to 4% where you're going to have subsidized interest rates, I guess compliments the taxpayers again to keep the cost down, which I don't know. To me, it's just distorting the market. The market's not
Wow.
being allowed to really work.
That's interesting. I wonder how they could actually, I guess they buy down the rate in some way or something is basically what the government's going to do. And
Right.
so, what's interesting about that is that says also, for those of who are out there hoping and praying for decline back to these single, low single interest rates, that's probably not going to happen because if the government's already talking about a formal program to help the affordable housing market in terms of interest rate buydowns, then to me that must signal that these rates are here either to stay long term or maybe even go up higher. Who knows?
There's two schools of thought about that, as far as the higher for longer, which obviously that's the Fed's policy statement. But if you're a student of history and you go back and look at the last four, that last three recessions in particular, each and every time there was discussions before the recession actually hit of soft landing, soft landing, soft landing. So this is nothing new, and everybody has an opinion about what the future holds. But I truly believe that capitalism works if it's allowed to work. And one of the most important principles of capitalism is the principle of creative destruction. And we haven't had creative destruction since 2008. So, and we've seen what has happened as a result. Here's a good illustration of what I'm talking about. I just had a closing yesterday on a foreclosure. I'm not going to mention any details on it other than that, as far as my the corporate client. But it was a very aggressively priced home in the acreage, which you're familiar with, that
Yep.
those are 1 acre lots. Needed a lot of work, frame construction, probably had significant termite damage as a sale, a lot of hair on this deal, but aggressively priced. We had 50 offers that went highest and best because of the price point, because there's a lot of demand for affordable housing in this market and there's no supply. The point I'm trying to make is if some of these foreclosures were allowed to happen and provide better priced opportunities for the demand that's out there, we would have actually, in my opinion, a stronger market, go from the weaker hands to the stronger hands. But by freezing the market by all this, what I call manipulation, the market's not allowed to work. That's concerning as far as what the end result's going to be down the road.
Yeah, no. I'm glad you said that, and it's a great segue because you mentioned historically. And one of my thoughts that I wanted to bring up today to remind viewers or listeners, we don't have viewers, in especially those in Florida or who invest in Florida, is historically, Florida, especially South Florida, has been known as a boom and bust real estate market. If you're younger than, if you're my kids' generation, you may have been around during 2009, but you would have been a child. But since then, we've been on this, whatever, 16-year upward run in real estate values, fueled by cheap money and then the print money printing machine of COVID. it's hard to really see the forest through the trees if you've never been through it like you have, having been around a little bit, And talk about that. Talk about some of the previous experiences. I mean, most of us know, if not having been through 2008, we've read about it, we saw The Big Short. But you go back a little even further than that to South Florida historically. I know there was, I believe, a condo crisis in the 80s that had values plummet. Just talk about that in general and any kind of perspective you can give, having seen that before.
Well, actually, the first cycle goes back to the 1920s. There's some interesting books written about that, about the kind of the boom bust nature of Florida, and that's been the history of Florida. And but every cycle is different, and different. There's always different nuances you have to kind of pick up on. This cycle is obviously a little bit different from the last one that we had, in the sense that we have a little bit of a property insurance crisis that's going on, as far as lack of coverage and significant increases in pricing for insurance. Hopefully that's going to get better this year as there's more private insurance carriers coming back into Florida, but that's a process that takes time. So, and at the same time that's happened, if you recall the condo tower that collapsed in the Miami-Dade area a year or two ago, because there was lack of reserves, because the board of directors were basically too cheap to put reserves in, and there's structural issues that caused that collapse. So as a result, the state of Florida has mandated that all condo associations have sufficient reserves by 25 to fund, the longer term, costs, for roofs, for
Maintenance.
structural analysis. So what's that done in particular are the associations that have not really provided that type of funding. There's a lot of catch-up provisions going on where you've seen significant increases in cost. And here's the illustrations, even affecting the business condos. I happen to be the POA president for a large condo association here in Jupiter, and I see it firsthand. 2 years ago, my quarterly condo fees for my business office that I own was $825 a quarter. It's $2,700 a quarter now.
Wow.
And that was a combination of higher insurance costs and the lack of proper reserves by the former manager that is no longer here, because he wanted to do all special assessments. So we had a lot of catch up. So, but that's kind of what you're seeing, as far as what's impacting the market in terms of demand, particularly when it comes to condos. So, but we're still seeing demand, Bill. We're still seeing people buying because, and I don't want to get too political, but you got a lot of people that are, that are coming. Well, for instance, Palm Beach County, 30% of the residents that are moving into Palm Beach County now are from California.
Wow, I'm the
Yeah. So,
only idiot that moved the other direction, I guess.
well, yeah, and I'd be curious to see what the price of your home is in Jupiter now that you sold
Oh,
back
don't
then.
even go there. I mean, I thought I had made the right move, with thinking I had escaped because COVID was coming in, and then here I am leaving all that cash on the table. And
Yeah.
there's it just goes to show that, in our careers, you can still have a profitable and successful career, and there's still always a woulda, shoulda, coulda. There always it will be. There always is. It's just the nature of the business. And, but I just remember, it's great that you pointed out that the booms and busts of Florida really do go back to the 20s, because that's true. There was going back. The original boom of Florida was when Flagler built the railroad to bring, expense rich Northeasterners down to Palm Beach and then further on to Miami and Key West. And I know the hurricanes, the weather events over the years have played roles, not so much as much in recent years. But I will tell you that, a lot of what started that slowdown in 06, I think, was a buildup of what that came out of a very active 2005 hurricane season, and then things slowed down further with financial markets. So there's, like you said, the insurance playing a role, the condominium special assessments, the huge demand uptick. I mean, Palm Beach County, you've hit it, you hit the nail on the head. I never would have thought that I would say that my house in Beverly Hills is actually reasonably priced, but it's more expensive to try to rent a house in Miami or Palm Beach than it is in Beverly Hills, California. I've got a kid that is a friend of my son's, mid-20s, looking for a rental in West Palm. Couldn't go, $4,500 a month for a two-bedroom condo on a low rise, in Wellington, not sound like it's on the water with amenities or anything. I mean, it used to be that Florida was, you could live a very comfortable life in a great environment and make 50, 60 grand a year and own a boat and live near the water. And what are those people doing these days, Joe? What are the folks like that?
Locals have been priced out of the market and they're moving north. They're moving out of Palm Beach, moving to Martin County, St. Lucie County, or even further north in the middle part of the state. Because quite frankly, those type of folks can't afford this market anymore. So, and you bring up an interesting point because those locals are now being replaced by more wealthy individuals. The capital goes where it's best treated. And that's part of the reason why we're seeing the continual demand from Wall Street, from New York, and the wealthier people that are moving here from California, because they still perceive Florida and particularly Palm Beach County as where their capital is going to be better treated. There's no state income
Right.
tax. There's better stability when it comes to government policy without getting too deep into the weeds on that. So that continues. So the smart money still continues to go into this market. But this recovery from COVID is I call it the K recovery, where if you look at the letter K and the upper arm of the K, that represents about 10 to 20% of the US population that are good net wealth. The lower part of the K represents 80 to 90% of the remaining population that are middle to lower class. And we're seeing a huge discrepancy between how those two parts of the market are handling what's going on right now. A lot
Right.
of people are living paycheck to paycheck on that lower tier. Their savings rates are low. Their credit card debt are extremely high. So those are some of the things that concern me longer term.
Yeah. And that's not obviously just Florida. I mean, you're seeing it in Florida. I'm certainly seeing that in Los Angeles. It's like the rich get richer and the middle class is getting squeezed out and everything's more expensive. If your condo fees in Florida went from 800 a month to 1500 a month, how do you budget for something like that? If you're a fixed income living wage person, and that's a problem in a national scale, not just in Florida. And I agree with you. The easy way is to say your money gets treated easier, and that is true. No state income tax. There's a lot of great things about Florida that I only learned having lived in other states, obviously. But the fact, really, also that I don't think any of us really kind of saw was how of an eye opener, how really of an opportunity the COVID experience opened up for those that are independent business owners or high-paid people who work for a company that now allows them to work from anywhere. And that really did change. If it only had, and we said it on this podcast years ago when we started, if it only shifted demographics in this country by 10%, it was obviously going to have a huge impact on places like where people are coming from, the Northeast city centers moving to places like Florida and Texas.
Yeah.
And that's just a shift, I think, that we're gonna have to get used to long term. That said, let's just look at let's pull out the crystal ball and spend a few minute or two and just talking about that. Because I know you, Joe, you and I listen to a lot of the same guys that are analyzing the markets and especially capital markets, and they're looking at factors like China and the implosion of real estate of values in China and the trillion, the fact that 70% of middle class wealth in Chinese culture was created during this huge bubble effect in real estate there. But any crystal ball commentaries, given that we're, nearing, believe it or not, already into the third month of the first quarter of Q1 2024. What are you hearing? I think it was interesting to hear the spike in FHA delinquencies. That certainly was new information. But any other prescient stuff for us to be looking at?
I think you have to kind of, when you're talking about capital markets, you have to really kind of look at on a global basis and then kind of hone in on some of the differences, the US versus other parts of the world. I mean, you've got Germany in a recession, you've got Japan in the recession, you've got England in a recession, you've got China, I think, in a recession. Of course, they're very opaque on the information they share. So the United States is probably the last guy standing when it comes for a major economy not to technically be in a recession. So a gentleman that I follow that I'm not sure you're aware of, Jeff Snyder, who happens to live here in West Palm Beach, by the way, has some very interesting things to talk about when it comes to what he would call kind of a synchronized global economy, which we're all dependent upon each other. And China, as an example, when times are good, exports cheap goods to the United States, but also when times are bad, like they're going through right now, also exports deflation to the United States, especially the US bondholders that are involved with the Chinese real estate. They're taking a big hit right now. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen between now and the end of 24. I mean, no one has a crystal ball, but I'm being very cautious right now as far as seeing how that plays out. I still am a big believer in economic history and understanding, without getting too much in the weeds, about the lag effect of interest rate, of the Fed interest rate policies. This one's taken longer to play out, in my opinion, because of the amount of fiscal stimulus. When you're running a $2 trillion deficit in peacetime, it's unheard of. Only in wartime have we seen something like that. And I think that's what's stopped us so far going into recession, is that
Right.
amount of stimulus. The question is, can it continue? And that's the big question that everyone wants to
Right.
determine.
Yeah, I agree. And I do. I think Jeff Snyder is a very smart guy. You turned me on to him, and I would recommend anyone that listens that wants to follow, look up Jeff Snyder on YouTube. He's got almost a daily broadcast, and he's covering some aspect of financial markets on a local or global scale. And you hit the point. It's like there's got to be a breaking point, right? We talk about all this inaffordability. We talk about the rich getting richer, but the middle class and poor are struggling to make ends meet, rising debt rates, rising default rates, no end in sight. And you're right. The government will do anything it can to prevent a major catastrophe prior to the election because they probably, they don't want that to be a factor. So you can count on potentially more stimulus. We heard about it here with the $9 billion commitment to affordable mortgages, which, but it is certainly a get your popcorn out kind of year. And if it doesn't happen before the election, it could be an interesting winter.
But ultimately, there's a reversion to the mean for all asset classes.
Right. It needs to happen. Mark,
Right.
like you said, the nature of markets is that they have to cycle. It's like that book, The Fourth Turning, another great thing that you turned me on to, which is another sociological study on civilization and societal cycles. And it's just the nature of life and death that life and death is a cycle, right? It's the nature of life on this planet and societally that we go through these cycles. And we need the rise in interest rates, like you pointed out, there's a lag. It creates a normalization of expectations. It resets the cost of capital. And I having been, just come from Vegas Structured Finance Conference last weekend, or earlier this week, which by the way, is that same conference in The Big Short when Steve Carell gets up and says, he interrupts the guy with a question and then walks out of the room. A true thing. By the way, that happened at this conference in 2008, I think it was. Yeah. And everyone says it. They're all waiting for the shoe to drop. Everyone knows that there's something on the horizon, something has to break. Who knows what it is? And I guess if I'm going to leave our audience with one more thought, or, and again, who knows what this means? at that SVG conference, that crazy structured finance conference in Vegas, it was the largest number of paid registrations ever for the conference. So you probably had about over 10,000 people, but about over 7,000 actual paid registrations. When do you think the last time the number two largest registrations at the structured finance conference ever happened?
2007 or 2008.
You nailed it, my friend.
History tends to repeat itself, or at least it rhymes.
That's right. That's right. Well, Joe, thank you. I appreciate your time. Thanks for sticking around and for joining us again this year. We'll definitely check back in. For those that want to speak to Joe, he's a leading advisor in the Florida real estate market, as you heard, based in Jupiter, Florida. The name of your firm is Jupiter. What is it?
I've got a number of different companies, my REO brokerage operation, and I do other stuff besides. I do a lot of commercial development work. And but anyway, that's Coastal Properties here in Jupiter. I have a website, www.coastalpropertiesflorida.com. And then I've got various investment organizations. The most recent one right now is Jupiter Realty Investments 5. And we're in the same space that you play in as far as distressed debt.
Yeah.
But we're keeping our powder dry for now, Bill. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we bought a HUD deal, another HUD deal in earlier this month, and but we're being very cautious because, it's only buying stuff I can turn around and get out of quick. So you just in this time when you're at the top of any market, you want to be extra careful, obviously.
It was good that you got a loan trader, too.
Great to be with you, Joe. We'll talk
Thanks,
soon.
Bill.
That's a wrap of today's episode of the Real Estate Lowdown. I enjoy bringing this content to you each and every week, and I really appreciate you tuning in. If you haven't already done so, please share the Real Estate Lowdown or any episode, any favorite episode with your friends, family, and if you don't mind, leave a positive review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Remember to follow us so you don't do get notified every time a new episode is released. Love to hear from you directly at billbymel.com. Till then, see you next time.